Understanding Radical Islam Without the Filter of Political Correctness is our topic on this portion of Vocal Point. Hello, I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is an accomplished author and speaker on the subject of Islam, Robert Spencer. He maintains the website jihadwatch.com. He's the author of 13 books, including Arab Winter Comes to America. Robert, welcome back to the program.
Very good to be here, Jerry. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. And I would like to have us just get a, basically an update on what's going on with radical Islam. There's not a day that goes by without something in the news, virtually. In fact, let's start with what happened in recent weeks in Moore, Oklahoma. Jihad comes to the hinterland of America.
Indeed. Moore, Oklahoma is the site of Vaughn Foods, a food processing plant where a young man named Alton Alexander Nolan worked. And some time ago, nobody's quite sure when, Alton Alexander Nolan converted to Islam. It seems as if he started out in black separatist movements and called himself Yaqeen Yisrael, but fairly soon became an Orthodox Sunni Muslim and began to frequent the Islamic Society of Greater Oklahoma City. And in any case, he started to antagonize his co-workers, had an argument with them over stoning women. He was for, they were against. And ultimately, he was suspended from his job after one of these arguments. And after, at that point, he went home, he got a big knife, he came back, he began stabbing one of his co-workers, and then beheaded her, and was in the process of beheading another when he was shot by the COO of the corporation, who happened to be carrying a gun. So the story is a good advertisement for the Second Amendment, as well as an indication that Islamic Jihad can be and is carried out by lone individuals who do not have ties to terror groups. Alton Alexander Nolan, Yaqeen Yisrael's Facebook page was full of jihadist material, admiration for Osama bin Laden, for Al-Qaeda, for the Islamic State, and even a picture graphic photo of a beheading. With the caption, a Quran verse that calls on Muslims to strike the necks of unbelievers. And so this guy was a true believer, a dangerous one, and he acted, whereupon, of course, the predictable response came from the United States government and law enforcement that this is workplace violence, has nothing to do with Islam, and so on.
Wow. And the Associated Press reported it as workplace violence. Where is the verse in the Quran that says strike the necks of the unbelievers?
Two places, Jerry. The one that was underneath the photo was chapter 8, verse 12, and that one says that Allah instructed the angels to strike the necks of the unbelievers and strike off their fingertips. But then in chapter 47, verse 4, it says straight out to believers, when you meet the unbelievers, strike at their necks.
Okay, that's 8, 12, and 37, 4. It's important, by the way, to remember these surahs. A surah just means chapter, right? But this is,
yes, that's right.
This is in their holy book, the Quran, and that's what we're dealing with. For example, 929 is one that I remember from long ago, but it says, slay the infidel wherever you may find them. That's still in force, right, for a good Muslim?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, 929 is actually the one that calls on Muslims to wage war against and subjugate the people of the book. It says, fight those who do not obey Allah and His Messenger, and do not forbid what He has forbidden, even if they are of the people of the book, that is, Jews and Christians primarily, until they pay the jizya with willing submission and feel themselves subdued. So that is a call to subjugate the Jews and Christians under the rule and hegemony of Islam. But the slay the unbelievers wherever you find them, that's in chapter 9, verse 5, chapter 2, 191, and chapter 4, verse 89.
9, 5. Okay. And this is all you're saying, like 9:5 is what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like, just like you would say
Deuteronomy 29:29.
Yeah,
exactly.
5:43. So, 9:29 is chapter 9, verse 29 of the Quran.
What's the deal with beheadings? You know, I've noticed, it seems as if whenever there's a beheading somewhere in the world, at least in modern times, you know, unless we're talking about an execution, you know, from way back when, even in England and certainly in ancient Rome and so forth, it seems to be associated with Islam. And I noticed this verse recently in Revelation chapter 20, just in my own personal Bible reading. It said this, and I'm going to quote, "And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of their testimony for Jesus and because of the Word of God, end quote, again, from Revelation 20. And I thought, isn't that fascinating? You know, it talks about Christians who faced martyrdom in the end times. That's kind of the overall context. And beheading is the way that they died. How interesting.
Yeah, I think that you're onto something there, Jerry. There's no accident there. It's just like a verse I often think of when the Lord says, the time will come when men will think they will, men will kill you and think they're offering service to God.
Yeah.
And I think that is the quintessential summation of what we have in Islam, that it's those who call evil good and good evil, and they think that they are serving God and being pious when they are killing infidels and raping infidel women and all these horrible things that are enjoined in the Quran. It's all prophesied there.
Wow. All right, we're getting an update on Islam from Robert Spencer of JihadWatch.com. Robert, I understand that there was another story out of Oklahoma. Thankfully, this is something where the authorities acted in time and prevented potential violence, but are you familiar with this particular story? I'm sure you are.
Yes, there was a second individual in Oklahoma, actually on the same day that Joaquin Israel beheaded Colleen Hufford in the Vaughn Foods plant. There was another Muslim in Oklahoma City right there who was threatening to behead one of his co-workers, but was arrested before he could follow through.
Wow, that's amazing. But he was definitely a Muslim, and there was a Muslim motivation, allegedly, that we know of.
Yes. What's interesting about it is that this man was charged with terrorism because he was very, I guess, obviously, in a way that they could not ignore or deny, associating his actions with Islam. But when it came to Joaquin Israel, they're saying it's workplace violence, which is kind of ridiculous.
That is ridiculous because, I mean, even his own, like you say, his own website was just filled with stuff. I understand that they had a he had an image of the smoking towers, as in the towers that fell on 9/11, as if he was celebrating that phenomenon. Okay, let's look at another issue. Ben Affleck and Bill Maher.
Ben Affleck and Bill Maher. You know, what's interesting about that, Jerry, is how Affleck is sort of a textbook illustration of how leftists are unwilling or unable to face up to tyranny and oppression and violence and all sorts of things they ostensibly reject when it comes from Islam. And Maher, actually, you know, to his credit, I've never had any respect for him.
To his credit, yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, he's saying these things that are correct. He's he actually was, this is how the whole segment started with the exchange with Affleck, is that he was saying that liberals had to, they say they're for free speech, they say they're for women's rights, and yet when it comes to Islam, they suddenly start temporizing and apologizing and retreating. And he was right on the money. There's no doubt that that's true, and Affleck is an illustration of it.
I was a guest on Bill Maher's program going back about 12 years ago or whatever, four times actually, when it was on ABC TV, and it was always, you know, four against one, and I was the one token conservative Christian, even in that case. But anyway, I've obviously disagreed with Bill Maher on many different things, but lately on the subject of Islam, he does speak with a moral clarity, and he's just saying, look, you know, this is their own doctrine that we have to deal with. That's what's at issue here. It's not that they're not people who are, you know, who won't kill you if you leave the religion, but the problem is that there are many who will, and that is a problem. It's the ideology is the issue, not the people per se.
It's kind of amazing that Maher has broken ranks in this regard from the leftist lockstep, single acceptable point of view. You know, it's funny how leftists are all about diversity, except for diversity of opinion.
Yeah. Is that true?
You only think one thing in one way, but they want all sorts of different colors of people saying the same thing. Maher is really, you know, I think it might be the heralding. I mean, it's early to tell yet, but it might be the heralding of a real split among leftists in this regard, and an end to this this lockstep in thinking. Maybe that's over optimistic, but we'll see.
Well, you work ultimately for David Horowitz, and I think Horowitz said years ago, in fact, I was interviewing him on the radio, and he made a fascinating point that liberals so often will basically make apologies for Islam, even radical Islam, and they don't realize that once a radical, you know, Islamic group takes over, let's say, a country, some of the first to go are the homosexuals and other types of liberals. So it's like, what are you doing? You know, you're just begging for your own head to be cut off or something here?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, I don't think that they really take them seriously. I think that they don't really believe that they'll do that, or they think that they will have won their gratitude such that they will be spared. It's naive, but of course you're talking about people who don't take religion seriously.
Yeah.
And in this case, I think it's going to redound to their detriment that they don't. And they think, well, these people, you know, they have their nutty little religious ideas, but we've done them so many favors, they'll surely have our back, and don't realize that these things are going to come down on them.
Yeah. So true. All right, let's shift gears and talk about another subject. Let's talk about ISIS, but let's bring it to home. Just recently, Gary Bauer wrote in his End of the Day report, and I'm going to quote him here, Representative Duncan Hunter, Jr., a Republican from California, made a troubling assertion recently on Greta Van Susteren's show. Duncan said, quote, I know that at least 10 ISIS fighters have been caught coming across the Mexican border in Texas. If they catch 5 or 10 of them, you know that there's going to be dozens more that did not get caught by the Border Patrol. Then later, a spokesperson for the Department of Homeland Security said Hunter's statement was categorically false, but Hunter's office stands by his remarks. What say you?
Well, I'll tell you, Judicial Watch, which I have no reason to doubt, said that they had obtained documents indicating that at least 4 Islamic State fighters have been caught at the border in the last 36 hours. And so I think that Hunter was telling the truth. There's no reason really to doubt that he was saying something that was true. And so the fact is that, you know, Jerry, for years now, there have been jihadis caught at the border. For years now, there have been a large number of people from places like Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, other jihadi hotspots, being arrested crossing over from Mexico.
This is not a well-known story, Robert.
It's not. It's not. But actually, I have an article about it at Front Page Magazine today, Thursday, as we are taping this, October, 9th. And in any case, the records go back for years. Large numbers of people from these jihadi hotspot countries being caught at the border. And many congressional hearings and this kind of thing about this, but of course nothing's ever done. And now under Obama, the problem is worse than ever. It's a strange situation that I think probably the government is only going to take action on when there is an actual attack, which I hope never happens. But once somebody who crosses over from Mexico is involved in a real jihad plot, then maybe we'll get some action.
All right, we're talking right now about understanding radical Islam without the filter of political correctness. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Robert Spencer, who's an authority, really, on the subject of Islam, has written 13 books, including 2 New York Times bestsellers. His latest book is Arab Winter Comes to America. Robert, let's shift gears and talk about ISIS, which we've already mentioned, but let's talk about them in terms of Syria and Iraq. ISIS, I believe, stands for Islamic State of Syria and Iraq. The other version with the L stands for Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. And then there's just the IS, Islamic State. By the way, it gets confusing. No wonder we're losing this war, it seems, because we're so confused by all the names and so forth.
I think the media abets this by not calling it one thing, by calling it using all 3 of these names and not really clarifying.
What do you call it?
Barack Obama, I call it the Islamic State. They call themselves the Islamic State. They've dropped the Iraq and Levant part. And so as
long
as
IS.
They call themselves that, I'll call them what they call themselves.
Okay.
Yeah, the Islamic State. The Islamic State, actually, the ISIS and ISIL, that's actually the same thing in Arabic. It's the Islamic State of Iraq and Shams. Shams. Shams is the Levant. Or,
oh, not
the area
Syria.
Of Syria and Lebanon.
Oh,
well,
the
Syria,
S in IS.
Part of it.
Okay, so the ISIS does not stand for the S. The final S in ISIS does not stand for Syria. It stands for
Shams, which is Syria and Lebanon and Israel, essentially.
Oh.
And it's an ancient Islamic geographical term for that area.
Oh,
and so,
wow.
It's variously translated. See, people see it and they just translate it as Syria, which is not quite accurate, and they translate it as the Levant. It's all the same name. In other words, it's not as if this group has two different names or even three.
Does that name itself imply that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, the modern state of?
Correct. And so I think it's interesting that Obama, of course, he's not going to call it the Islamic State because he wants to obscure that it's Islamic. And he chooses over ISIS to call it ISIL, which just emphasizes that Israel is claimed. I don't think that's an accident.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, so Islamic State is just one group of many jihadists out there today. They believe that they are now in the process of restoring the caliphate, which was destroyed by Turkey, I guess, at the collapse of the Ottoman Empire after World War I. So back in the 1920s, the caliphate was disbanded, and now we have a new caliphate, and al-Baghdadi is the main guy, the caliph.
Yeah, and this is a huge thing. It can't be discounted at all. It can't be underestimated. The restoration of the caliphate is, in the first place, the aspiration of all the jihad groups. This is one of their chief agendas, to restore the caliphate. And so this group has really gotten a jump on all the others, including al-Qaeda and Hamas and Hezbollah and so on. Well, Hezbollah is Shiite, and that's different. But in any case, jump on all the other Sunni jihad groups by actually claiming to have restored the caliphate. Al-Qaeda tried to do it with the Taliban in Afghanistan by calling Mullah Omar, the head of the Taliban, the caliph in the 90s. But it didn't really take because they didn't hold power. It's all about whether you hold power. Mm-hmm. And so this Islamic State, having been able to sustain itself, at least for these few months so far, has gotten tremendous support. While we see the condemnations from Islamic groups raining down, it's also the case that there are Muslims from all over the West going over to Iraq and Syria to join up with the Islamic State. And this is because this idea of the caliphate has tremendous resonance for Muslims. And we never saw these kinds of numbers of Western Muslims going to join al-Qaeda or other jihad groups, but they certainly are going now well over 1,000 from Western Europe and the U.S. into the Islamic State because they want to be in the caliphate.
Okay, now, just to put things in perspective, it's my understanding that approximately 85% of Muslims in the world are Sunni Muslims, and then 15% would be the Shiites. The Shiites, their biggest country, I guess, would be Iran, right?
Yes. And then they have a majority in Iraq, and they have a majority in Bahrain, and the significant minorities in Saudi Arabia and elsewhere. But,
okay.
Only about 15% of Muslims worldwide.
How do the Shiites in Iraq fare under the Sunni Muslims that are a part of this IS movement, the Islamic State movement?
Very badly. They get killed or enslaved. They flee if they can, in all cases. Most of the territory that the Islamic State controls in Iraq is not where the Shiites live, and they have not yet made significant headway in Shiite areas. If they do at any point, it will be a bloodbath.
Wow. Baghdad, would Baghdad as a city be mostly Shiites then?
Yeah, Baghdad and southern Iraq is where the Shiites are, and the Sunnis are in northern Iraq. And so this is the big question now. If they will they be able to take Baghdad? Will the Iranians allow it for them to take Baghdad? Because the Iranians want to prop up, of course, their Shiite client state in Iraq, which is essentially now only just Baghdad and the southern part of the country. And in attempting to shore it up, will they try to destroy the Islamic State altogether? It's interesting. It's an interesting question, and really, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, because Iran right now may be the only force that will be able to take down the Islamic State.
Isn't that amazing? You know, I hate to say this, Robert, but as you're describing all these things, I can't help but think in the back of my mind, wow, where's Saddam Hussein when you need him?
Yeah, well, you know, Saddam Hussein was a scoundrel, and Saddam Hussein was terrible, but...
He patterned himself after Stalin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
I read that in one of the books about him.
Yeah. It's unleashed all this. The United States government assumed that there would be a Western-style republic in Iraq, and that we would install it after Saddam Hussein was gone, and the Sunnis and the Shiites would
together
peacefully cooperate and vote and work like the United States does. This was a very naive view, and it wasn't based on any reality, and it's been exposed now, obviously. I mean, I even called it in March 2003. I wrote an article that I still have up at Jihad Watch, because it shows that this was all foreseeable. Mm. It wasn't that I was some genius, but you just had to know what we were dealing with in Iraq, that the whole thing was never going to work as a Western-style republic, because Sunnis would vote for Sunnis and Shiites for Shiites. They would never vote for each other. And then the group that lost, which would be the Sunnis, since they did not have a majority in Iraq, would be disenfranchised and angry and would wage jihad against the larger Shiite government. And the whole thing would devolve into chaos. And here we are.
Can Islam itself exist without violence?
Not really, no. Not when you have the holy book of Islam calling on believers to wage war against unbelievers. And with there being a death penalty for heresy and for apostasy, then, you know, the Sunnis think the Shiites are heretics and vice versa, and so they'll kill each other, and they'll kill unbelievers. And there's no reason for them to stop, because in it they think they are serving God.
Okay, but what about all the moderate Muslims or all the peaceful Muslims?
Well, there are plenty of moderate and peaceful Muslims. There's no gainsaying that. That's absolutely a fact. In other words, what I mean by this term is that there are Muslims who are not interested in waging jihad, and they just want to go about their lives, and they were born into an Islamic culture, an Islamic country perhaps, but just not interested in any of it, just like they're nominal Christians. But they're not going to lift a finger against the jihadis, and they're not going to stop them. They really just want to lie low and not attract attention, actually, because if they do attract attention, then they themselves might be victimized.
Okay, good point. Where do all the Christians fit in this, and specifically just focus, if you would, on Iraq and then also Syria?
Well, since the toppling of Saddam Hussein, the Christian population of Iraq has been decimated, and particularly now with the rise of the Islamic State, pretty much all the Christians have been driven out of Iraq. The Roman Catholic Archbishop of Mosul, which was a Christian area, said not too long ago that entire diocese has been destroyed by the jihadis, and that the same thing was coming to the Christians in the West, and they were naive if they didn't think so. And the Christians who left Iraq, many of them went to Jordan, but many of them also went to Syria. But then with the uprising against Assad, the whole thing began in Syria as well. And so now Christians are under serious threat in Syria, where historically they have had relatively equal rights. And we are looking at now, after 2,000 years, some of the earliest Christian communities being completely free of Christians, being completely rid of Christians. And it's a global scandal, but nobody seems particularly concerned about it.
As far as the United States even voting just in the last month or so to support somebody in that conflict against IS, Are we supporting the right people? Of course, in this kind of context, it's like, well, who do you support other than, say, the Christians or the Yazidis or somebody that's not going to be intent on killing the opponent?
Yeah, we could have supported the Christians had they still been there. We could have supported the Kurds, who are still there. But the Obama administration chose to support the Free Syrian Army, which on three separate occasions, at least three, Jerry, actually went into Christian areas in Syria and drove all the Christians out and destroyed the churches and seized the Christians' land and property. And so these are the moderates that we're on their side. It's astonishing.
It is astonishing. Well, we only have a few minutes remaining. What would you like to cover that we haven't covered in terms of getting an update on radical Islam?
Well, we did the border.
How about a comment about our prisons, U.S. prisons?
Yeah.
I understand that there's conversions in prisons for Islam, such as the Moor beheading, alleged murder.
Yeah, Joaquin Israel was converted to Islam in prison, absolutely. And he is just one of many who have been converted to Islam in prison. There is a concerted effort to target Muslims in prison and convert them to Islam and to channel, target prisoners and convert them to Islam.
Yeah.
And to channel their alienation, their anger, and their aggression into jihad activity. And so this is a very worrying development, actually. Nobody seems particularly concerned about it, of course, but they ought to be, because it heralds more chaos and destruction, more jihad violence in the U.S. when these guys get out and they go jihad like Joaquin Israel did.
Hmm. Okay, what about Iran's attempt to get the bomb?
Iran's attempt to get the bomb continues. Of course, Obama's helping. And
not officially.
It's a matter of time. You know, Obama signed these agreements that essentially allow them to develop a bomb, and so there's no impediment at this point.
Huh. Okay, how about a comment about Turkey at this present time as a country? Because Turkey, starting in the early 20s with Ataturk, and he scrambled a few heads to do this, but essentially created a secular state, not allowing radical Islam to take over. But how's it going today in Turkey?
Well, in Turkey, now, because of the new president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who was for many years the prime minister, the country is moving away from secularism and rejecting the legacy of the last 90 years. And re-Islamizing, and it shows itself in a variety of ways. One is that the Turks, having aided the Islamic State, now as a NATO member, are being called upon by Obama and John Kerry to fight against the Islamic State, and they've refused. Even when just the other day a Syrian border town, Kobani, is being besieged by the Islamic State, and the Turkish army is right there within the sight of what's happening, and they don't do a thing. This is a sign of Turkey's new orientation. They hate the Assad regime in Syria, and they want it gone, and they're willing to deal with the Islamic State to get that.
Can you leave us with a thought of hope related to the whole subject of Islam?
Yeah, but Jerry, there's no earthly hope. There's the authorities are in the tank. The media, everybody, they just have no clue about this, or they're actually on the other side. So the hope that we have is in the truth and in God, that the truth will prevail ultimately. I do not believe that the human spirit will allow it to be trampled and lost. And the truth, after all, is just reality. And I don't think that mankind can just avoid reality forever. And so I'm confident that one day these things will turn around, but I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Hmm. Yeah, and we're not served well by our politicians and by our media. You know, for example, David Cameron said recently, they're not Muslims, they're murderers.
Yeah.
Well, with all due respect, Mr. Prime Minister, they are Muslims and they are murderers.
Yes.
Robert.
They're murdering in the name of Islam, in fact.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what they're commanded to do. Okay, Robert, and I will just close with this, the comment that the greatest answer, I think, to the problem of radical Islam is the gospel of Jesus Christ, because the more that become Christians truly, the more they will abandon jihad. Robert Spencer, always a pleasure. Jihadwatch.org for more information. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks, and God bless. Bye-bye.